Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.
Okay, third hour, hour number three on the show, Tiki and Tierney, as you move throughout your day and across the country. Hopefully you're hanging in there, doing what you got to do just to piece it together. And on to the next one. On to the next one. All right, so we're in our studio. It's the Rocket Mortgage by Quicken Loan Studio. Home is more than a house. It's a personal paradise. Get yours with Rocket Mortgage. Push button. Get mortgage. Tiki and Tierney. Tiki, wanted to circle back to Tua because we had a good conversation with his former teammate there, Terrell Lewis from Alabama, linebacker, who's overcome a lot. So we've got Tua this segment. We've got a good third hour coming for you. 1-855-212-4227. If you wanted to get it on the calls, whether it's Antonio Brown being a good or a bad fit for the Ravens. We opened up with that. We had a great, great spicy debate with LSU and what's going on there and the scheme on HBO, the documentary, and Arizona as well with Sean Miller. I just came across something, though, really, really uniquely funny, and I honestly did not know this.
Yeah.
And I'm surprised.
Go ahead.
Because I take a lot of pride knowing most things about baseball, especially if it was pre- or I should say post, you know, anything from the 70s on. And I don't mean like great players in history. I mean, I'll go back as far back as you want to go. But I mean like unique tales. I never heard this until I read or read this until now. 1977. This was on social media. The Brewers and the Royals were playing and they wrapped up their Saturday afternoon game. And I don't know what time it was, but before the game started on, before Sunday morning, when they came back from the hotel and reconvened in the locker room, getting ready to play Sunday, I imagine Sunday matinee, you know, 1 o'clock East or whatever, the a bunch of thieves broke into the Kansas City clubhouse, all right, and they stole 53 Royals uniform shirts, 20 gloves, 10 pairs of spikes, and 15 warm-up jackets. So okay. what happened, and there's
that's an random.
Article. What's that?
That's random.
It's crazy. There's an article in the New York Times about this that I have yet to read, which I will read at some point, you know, between, you know, when the show's over and probably tonight. But what I did listen to, there's a great clip on Mel Allen, This Week in Baseball, the Twib Notes, right, from 1977, June. And Mel Allen, and it's actually, they subscribe, they translate the audio to words for Twitter. It says, here's a Milwaukee Brewer hitting the ball. Mel Allen calling the game. One of the greatest voice of all time in baseball, for my money. And a Milwaukee Brewer catching the ball. The Royals had to wear Brewer uniforms.
Wow.
So it was Brewers versus the Brewers.
Wow.
You imagine that?
I guess in baseball it would be very difficult if you didn't explicitly have name and number to distinguish between players, unless you just knew what position they were at, or you know, uh-huh. You'd have to have a lot of familiarity with a team in order to just blindly be able to say, oh yeah, that was XYZ guy.
That's true.
the
one saving grace, obviously, you know, with the nine positions, if it's kind of fragmented.
Yeah, but this is the away commentator, right?
Well, I think it was a national game, I believe. Mel Allen was just, I don't know. Mel Allen was voicing This Week in Baseball. I don't know how the local voice for the Royals handled it, or really, probably more specifically, how the local voice for the Brewers handled it. That's fair, but I thought it was like I think it will be tougher. At least there's separation in terms of like baseball is almost about social distancing if you kind of think about it.
Yeah, it's true.
Outside of the batter and the catcher and the umpire, that's pretty much it. Everybody else is spaced out. so you can kind of determine and decipher what's up with that. Imagine if you had 10 guys on the basketball court wearing the same uniform. or you know.
Yeah, but at least you could see their faces. You know, they have hats on. Their, yeah. You know what I mean? Like you could more, I think, easily distinguish players on a basketball court. Football would be utterly impossible.
Oh, God, forget football.
Forget it. Wouldn't even be worth trying.
Get a baddie.
Exactly. You just say, yeah, the one team ran for this and the other team did that. That's the only thing you could talk about.
it would sound like my first play-by-play call ever. Did I tell you this one? I don't think I ever told you this. First time I'm ever doing play-by-play. So it's 1999, and I'm in Allentown, and I'm making $16,000. That was my first job. That you knew. $16,000 to do a morning show in Allentown, PA in 99. And they're like, hey, you know, we've got this great deal with some of the high schools, and they're really good. You know, high school football in PA, as you know, is awesome.
Oh, it's north. It's Pennsylvania and Texas and Florida.
Uh-huh. And a few others, but California, of course, and New Jersey's really strong. Ohio is strong. I remember Jesuit school was coming into play. So, anyway, long story, I don't want to get too sidetracked. But they said, well, you know, if you want to call the game, have you ever done play-by-play? Of course I've done play-by-play. Yeah. I've done a ton of games. I've never done one in my life. So they're like, well, it's $50. You know, you'll do the play-by-play. You'll have a color guy, like a local high school coach. I'm like, absolutely. Not only did I have to set up the equipment myself, it's called the Marty device. It looks like an old 1970s antenna, which was fine once I figured out how to actually get it to work, because you know I'm not good with that stuff. The game starts, right? And, you know, I'm butchering things left and right. Horrendous. Absolutely. No sense of what's what. Terrible calls. Not on point. Really bad. And I remember one team, it was a Catholic school. Notre Dame was playing. I forget the opponent. And I'm in the press box. And right in front of me, because it's a tiny little rickety wooden, I thought it was going to break, actually. It was so small. There was a band in front of me blasting the trombone. I can't even hear myself think. So the snap, I guess it's fourth down. And Notre Dame is at their own – they're inside their own 10, so they're pinned really inside, almost at their own goal. So they snap the ball. The ball goes over the punter's head. It goes into the end zone. There's a scrum battle for the ball. Eventually, it's recovered by the opposing team touchdown. So if you know – if you actually know how to do play-by-play, it should sound something like, you know, here's the snap. Oh, Aaron, over Jones's head. It's loose. It's in the end zone. Who's got it? You know, and you kind of just take everybody through it. I was so lost, I just went, the snap, touchdown! I missed everything. And
because you're trying to process it. You're trying to, like, figure out what you should say.
Yeah, exactly.
That's awesome.
And I missed the whole call. I missed every mechanical aspect of doing the call right. But and this is true. That night, I went home, because especially when I was young, I listened to all my old shows and try to determine what I did well and what I did poorly and what I need to work on and all that. I remember sitting having a beer in my apartment in Allentown, Pennsylvania, and I rewound it. And aside, you know, rather than saying, geez, I mean, that was bad, you missed everything, I'm like, that touchdown call was awesome. You can make it.
At least the touchdown part of it.
Exactly.
Forget that I didn't get any of the particulars.
Exactly. Speaking of touchdowns, you know that I think Tua is going to be throwing a ton of them because I trust his body. Yeah, I know he had the ankle procedure a couple times. Yeah, I know his hip exploded against Mississippi State. I know. I am moving mountains. That's the terminology that I used the other day. I'm moving mountains to get him. I am jumping up to the two spot. I would deal with the Redskins. I believe the Bengals will take Burrow despite some noise that maybe they won't, whatever, that Miami might trade in. If Miami beats you to one and they take Tua, or they take Burrow, then it changes the conversation. But, Teak, I am all in. I'm putting my chips in the middle of the table. I am behind Tua. I got his back.
Well, if he's healthy, I don't see any reason for him not to be number one. I know, and again, we've had this conversation many times, but the fact that he played at Alabama, we just had Terrell Lewis on, who is one of the starting outside linebackers for the Crimson Tide. And, you know, I asked him this question because I had been to probably three Alabama games over the last, maybe four over the last two seasons. And when you go down to that stadium, it feels like a pro atmosphere. Obviously it's collegiate, and it's intense and it's massive. And they got the strobing lights now at the top of the stadium, and it's awesome.
I got to get there.
Yeah, you do. You really do. It's football like no other in college football, but like the way that like it feels inside the locker room, like down below the in the tunnel. It feels like you're in an NFL game, right? The intensity and the it's not like jovial. It's not like fans, you know, horsing around. It's like you're watching them getting ready to go into a pro football game, and that and being in that space for three seasons that Tua was in, playing some seriously intense rivalry games, even against you know teams that they. You know, probably should easily beat. They still would give them games because it's the intensity of the SEC. It prepares you in a way that I don't think you can find other places. And to have done it consistently, to me, makes Tua the guy. I know the big issue is the health, is the hip and the ankle injuries, which now he's fixed and should be good to go because they're tight-roped right now. It shouldn't be an issue going forward. I absolutely would take him. I love the kid. I think he's got the right attitude. He's humble but confident. And he I don't know, he just feels like a leader to me. You look at him and he feels like a leader. That to me is number one overall pick.
Okay, so we're on the same page with that. The one thing that is a little unique here is that, you know, for all the pressure and all the ambiance and all the professional backdrop that program presents and everything a quarterback needs to compartmentalize, right? And I get it. I really get it. Brody Croyle, Greg McElroy, A.J. McCarron, Blake Sims,
true.
Jay Coker, right?
There's not
Blake Barnett.
I mean, who is it? Is it who is the quarterback that's recently come out of there? And I mean
none
recently, like in 20 years.
None.
Yeah, there's none.
I mean, Jalen Hurts was obviously very good.
But I'm talking about like made it to the
Joe Namath
and started.
Joe Namath.
And you forget like being on the like started in the NBA. Forget being a star.
Mm-hmm.
Just started in the NFL. I said NBA. But
Kenny Stabler. You going back to the mid 60s?
Yeah, that was
at that
60s.
Point? No, I hear you.
In Alabama's defense, up until A.J. McCarron. Because even A.J. McCarron, I mean, they threw the ball, 120 times a season. Right? They didn't throw the ball. They ran the rock down your throat. Maybe there's a couple of bombs that they would let go here and there. But they ran the ball. Play defense, run the football. So in defense of Alabama quarterbacks, they were never asked to do anything close to what an NFL quarterback is asked to do, which is drop back 30-plus times on any given day and be accurate. And so that's changed, however, in the last couple of seasons, especially because of Tua, I think, right? We remember when Jalen Hurts was a rookie. It was, a first-year rookie, a freshman at Alabama, and he played. He couldn't throw the football. In fact,
no.
That became the knock on him.
No.
It's like, oh, he's a good athlete. He's a good decision maker. He's a good leader. He can take you to the championship, which he did. But he's not going to beat you by throwing for 350 yards. But then when Tua took the reins, it was all about throwing the ball. He won that championship against Georgia by heaving the rock. What did he throw it 20 times or something in the second half, and had a huge impact on Alabama's future as it pertained to what the offense was going to look like. So he kind of changed. Like he's the catalyst, right? He changed what Alabama used to be like into what it is now.
Yeah, and just to be clear, because I think some people may have thought I was kind of going in a different direction, I am definitely not forecasting any sort of NFL doom for Tua, just because there's not great, quarterback royalty or lineage, at least recent lineage for sure. I mean, you have Bart Starr, you have Richard Todd, was a first-round pick, Joe Namath. You've got some names in the, from the mid-50s forward into the 70s that were in some cases, top shelf, Joe Namath, of course, and Bart Starr. But I think that I guess I'm still a little surprised. It would almost be like, basketball is not the perfect example because the point guard, while it's the quote-unquote most important position on the team, it's not. Like, it would almost be like North Carolina or Duke Hoops not having much professional success at the position you deem most important. Like, it's almost counterintuitive to look at Alabama over a 20-year broad stroke and say, man, they've had no quarterbacks except this guy.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's crazy.
It is a little, especially with all the success that they've had. It flies in the face of what we talk about is important in football, which is having a great quarterback. Well, they've had some good quarterbacks. I'm not saying AJ McCarron wasn't really good, because he was.
Yeah, he won. He won. Greg McElroy won.
But he wasn't like a great quarterback.
No.
But they won, you know? So it's actually even more, you know, commendable, some of the success that they have, given that they were zagging while everybody was zigging, mm-hmm. you know, trying to be wide open and, you know, have these, let's put up 400 yards passing a day offenses. Alabama did it the old school way. And even though now they're coming a little bit into the four of the, you know, by throwing the ball a lot more now, they still are old school. They still want to run the ball and they still want to, you know, play stout defense. They can't do it as effectively because teams are catching up, especially in the SEC West. But Alabama, you got to give them some credit for sticking to their ways.
Mm-hmm. No question. And Tua is going to be hotly debated and hotly contested as a topic. But you know where this show resides. If we're playing poker, chips hit in the middle of the table, and we are back in Tua. No doubt about that. Coming up, here's a question for you. What if there's a one-year suspension and there's no season? Wait to hear another dopey plan for Major League Baseball. God, they remain lost. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. CBS Sports Radio's toll-free line is 1-855-212-4227, sponsored by GEICO. Whether you own or rent, GEICO makes it easy to bundle home and auto insurance. Having a home is hard work. Get a quote at GEICO.com. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network, a little Sirius XM 206, Twitter at Tiki and Tierney, radio.com. All right, this pissed me off. I'm not going to lie to you. I was texting you guys early today. I couldn't wait. I thought we had some great topics for the show. I was on top of this early. I'm like, we have to find a way to weave this in. This is more than inbounds, out of bounds. We have to make this at least a full segment. So let's get into it. Major League Baseball, once again, absolutely, utterly lost. According to ESPN's Buster Olney, I like Buster. Here's what he says. Former Astros skipper A.J. Hinch and ex-Astros GM Jeff Luhnow will fulfill their one-season suspensions for the team's sign-stealing scandal, even if no baseball is played in 2020. So get this straight. If, God forbid, there's not a single pitch thrown this year, the 2020 season never gets out of the box and it's on ice for 162, and there's not an inning or a pitch, then A.J. Hinch and Jeff Luhnow get right back. Well, at least A.J. Hinch will get a job. Now, yeah. I don't think Jeff Luhnow will.
Why does this bother you?
It bothers me because it's not representative of what penalties are supposed to represent.
Which is time away from the actual
game. The actual game. Correct. I'll tell you this, man.
It is kind of, right? Because they're not involved. I can see it both ways, though.
Go ahead.
Because he currently, let's just stick with A.J. Hinch, because I think I kind of agree with you. I mean, maybe Luhnow shows up in some other capacity, but not as a general manager. But let's just stick with A.J. Hinch. So, like, he's not involved with the team. He's not being paid. He has no, like, charges, meaning, like, people that he has influence over, players to dictate and do whatever. And a year away from the game, it could be devastating, but probably not, because he's still so young. So he's, even though he's not going to necessarily miss out on anything if the season is canceled, he is kind of missing out on being relevant, right? Because we're not going to be talking about A.J. Hinch even if the season is canceled.
Well, I mean, listen, to me, this is just another poor job, another sloppy job by a gentleman who, I hate to frame it this way, because I really am rooting for Rob Manfred to be the guy for the next 12, 15, 20 years. I don't know. I mean, but he's been sloppy. I got to call it the way I see it. He's been sloppy on so many levels here, and I think this is just another example of his sloppiness, because the wording, all right, from Manfred's decision, the punishments end, quote, following the completion of the 2020 World Series, end quote. All right, you want to tell me, Who could have possibly had a notion that we were about to get stricken globally by this pandemic? And nobody. I understand that.
But what if there's no 2020? Just to be Mr. Literal. Uh-huh. Mr. Literal.
Right? But yes.
So if there is no 2020 World Series, uh-huh, it shouldn't, like, by default, don't you flip to the next one? Because isn't that how rules...
Yes.
Isn't that how...
I mean, that's how I would do it.
But I'm trying to think. Isn't there a rule like this as it pertains to trades? Maybe that's in the NBA. I think it's probably in the NBA.
In what regard, T?
Like a conditional draft pick, and if the pick... it reverts to the next year, or if you don't miss the condition. So say you draft the first round, you trade your first round pick, but it's top 10 protected, right?
Uh-huh.
And let's say you're in the top 10, so you get to keep your pick. That you don't all of a sudden have a trade with that other team. Like the first pick now goes to the second, it goes to the next year. You understand what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying.
So,
well, that pertains to the Knicks and the Mavericks, one of the examples from the KP trade.
That's exactly right. So it's top 10 protected. If the Knicks end up in the lottery, fourth pick or whatever it may be, the Kings don't get that pick, right? And so I wonder if that language exists anyway, so that if there is no 2020 World Series, does this automatically apply to the 2021?
Well, I don't think it does, though, because
probably not. But I mean, that would have been
the
way to do it.
But
yeah,
that's the
point.
I mean, based on Buster Olney's reporting, and Buster's been tied in and locked into baseball for 20 years. I mean, he's great. He really is. He's well sourced, and he's a good guy. He's a great reporter. He's one of the few. Well, not one. I shouldn't say that. But he's one of the guys who seamlessly transitioned from being a writer to actually getting in front of a camera and having a presence. A lot of people struggle with that. He's been very good at that for a long time.
It's true.
But
he was a beat writer for the Giants, by the way.
Yeah, he was. Yeah, correct. And he was also with the Yankees, with the New York Times. I mean, he put his time in for sure. A couple of books, a good author. But if you're Rob Manfred, just like David Silver, Adam's David Silver. I keep saying David from 90210. David Silver. David Stern, rest in peace, or Adam Silver. You have legal backgrounds. Rob Manfred has a legal background. And if you're a lawyer, isn't the onus on you to incorporate every aspect, every perceivable possibility? I mean, in 1994, there was no World Series. I know that those were completely different circumstances, but you just never, never know. And the fact that there's not some small print in here, and I don't think there is, because I think it would have been uncovered by now, or at least somebody would have refuted Buster's report, tells me that this was hastily done, like everything seemingly is done with baseball, in a hasty fashion.
Yeah.
I really think that.
Yeah, it feels like they're just reacting, and as opposed to thinking about, the implication here. Now, if you're A.J. Hinch, you love this.
Of course.
You can get back in the game pretty quickly, especially given that you were mostly exonerated, even though you showed a lack of leadership in squashing it when he had opportunities to. He tried to, but he didn't explicitly say this isn't happening. But for the most part, I don't think we're holding a grudge, fans, or even players or other executives for other teams. I can't speak to that personally, but I would think they're not holding this over AJ Hinch like they're holding it over a lot of these players who they still haven't, given the okay to be cool with.
Yeah, I think there's some real definitive separation there in the distribution of vitriol. I would agree with that. I when I texted you guys today, I went so far as to write, and I'll say it on the air, obviously, if we squeeze in 100 games this year, then they shouldn't be able to participate for the next 60 or the first 62 games next season, encompassing a full season. You get a one-year ban. And I understand a one-year ban, you can look at it one of two ways. You can look at it as the actual playing of a full season or the elapsing of a calendar year. I choose to go toward the former. I look at it as 162 because that's got to be the punishment. Otherwise, you're just, yes, monetarily, you're taking a hit because you're not getting paid. But all these guys, or at least the two gentlemen I'm talking about now, have so much money in the bank or enough money in the bank that it's not about finances, it's about principle. And this frightens me as a real baseball fan that, anytime something needs to be done in a buttoned-up, diligent, ironclad manner, that we might not have the guy to, the right commissioner to do it.
True.
Just a sloppy article.
True. But nobody could have predicted this type of pandemic taking over. He probably shouldn't have answered or at least provided any clarity on this. He should have thought about it and waited for this to actually be needed to be talked about. You know what I mean? In some ways. But I also think about this from this angle. If you're A.J. Hinch, because we believe that A.J. Hinch will get another job in Major League Baseball, if what you're espousing should happen, meaning you miss, they only play 100 games and you should miss another 62 the next season, it effectively suspends him for two seasons.
Which, by the way, take it out. Certainly, I want you to finish. I don't think that will happen. I'm just
no,
saying,
I don't
either.
I don't either. But I'm just using your example. Uh-huh. Let's just say that. So they play 100 games this year. Hell, if they even play 80, they play 80 games.
At this point, I'll take
80.
Year. Yeah,
I know, right? Give me anything. Uh-huh. Just give me a World Series.
Yes.
and make it quick because we want to watch something.
please.
But let's say they play 80 VT, and you know, obviously he's missing this season. If he's also now, or say 82, now if he's also suspended, or 81, he's also suspended for 81 next year, he's effectively suspended for two seasons.
You can look at it that way, and what you're saying, that's overly
because
punitive.
Nobody's going to hire a skip. Uh-huh. It's only going to be available for half the season. So it depends on how you cut it, you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm. So based on that, and it's a smart thing to weave into the conversation, you're basically saying, based or judging the original penalty, it would be too punitive to have it bleed into another season because, in essence, that equates to 2 years.
Yes, because he's not getting a job if he's suspended for any amount of time.
You could look at it that way. You could. You know, I think what's going to happen with AJ, I think AJ might be the kind of guy. First of all, I think the path for him to get back in is going to be as a bench coach in one of two ways. I don't think he'll get hired as a manager right away. I think he's going to either have to take the bench coach route or lay out. Somebody's going to get fired, and then he jumps in midseason.
Yeah.
That's how I think it's going to happen with AJ Hinch.
I think you're probably right.
You know,
but he was great, and we know this. Other than this lack of leadership and this cheating scandal, but he managed things well. Talking about his rotation and his bullpen. Now, obviously, a lot of that winning we'll call into question, but he seemed to be the right coach for that type of team, and a lot of teams are going to start taking that approach. Not the banging on the trash cans, but the build from the farm system, you know, pay these guys young, get them up, and let them grow together. And hopefully you win a championship that way.
Yeah, I mean, I like him. He won a lot of games, nearly 500, and he was there when they were just trying to rebuild. They were trying to get the train moving, which was not easy. They lost a lot of games. They took it on the chin a long time, back-to-back 100. Not that he was in the dugout for all of it, but just organizationally where they were. Back-to-back 100 loss seasons, and it wasn't like 1-1. I mean, they were pitiful, man. They were just a bad, disjointed, absolute train wreck of a franchise. And, you know, I remember one of the inbounds, out-of-bounds years ago that we did. I forget exactly what year, but, I mean, it's going back a long time ago because they've been good for a while. I remember one time you and I discussed about how they registered a literal 0.0 rating on their local regional outlet.
Yeah, that's right.
Do you remember that?
I do remember that. And we didn't fault them. It's like, dude, you suck.
You know what I mean?
So why would you watch them?
0.0.
And there was nobody to. I mean, there was a couple guys you would have cared about, but not a ton of them.
Man, oh man. All right, T. Coming up, we've got the Blast. Guess what? Good news for you. The Masters will be played. Get to that. Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio. All right, Tiki and Tierney, CBS Sports Radio, CBS Sports Network back. You know what I just noticed? And it took me about 2 hours and 41 minutes to actually notice this. It is hot as hell in my office today. It is hot in here. I don't know why.
Greenhouse effect.
Is that what it is?
Probably. Because you got a window right by your desk just like I do.
I do.
The sun beats in after a while because you're talking,
obscured.
The door's closed.
No. The sun is not a direct. By the time the show starts at 3 Eastern, the sun has shifted in a spot that is not impacting my windows. You know, it looks like the thermostat's on 70. I mean, I don't know. A little warm in here today. Well, hot. We're getting ready to wrap it up. Good stuff today. A lot of quarterback talk and that LSU-Arizona stuff. By the way, if you haven't seen Scheme on HBO, great documentary. Check it out. Teek and I spent a lot of time on that. So it is all good, but I think we are ready to blast away. Teek, if we get the green light, you good?
I am. Let's go.
Let's hit it.
So many topics, so little time. We give you 5 stories in 5 minutes, but don't take too long or you'll suffer the buzzer. It's time for The Blast with Tiki and Tierney.
All right, Buffalo Bills GM Brandon Bean. There's a lot of bees right there. Believes, there's another one. The Pats are still the team to beat in the AFC East? Is the league giving Bill Belichick too much respect?
No, I don't think they're giving Belichick and the Patriots too much respect. You just have to look at the realities of last season. So last year, they were just inferior offensively to what they've always been. Look, they scored a lot. That's because their defense put them in very advantageous positions with interceptions. They led the league in interceptions and turnover margin, and their defense was number one in the country in the NFL.
Yep.
So offensively, they benefited from that on a scoring standpoint. But yards-wise, they were just middle of the pack. They were very average. And so I think when teams look at the New England Patriots, they know that offense is important, but defense, especially the way that the Patriots opportunistically played defense last year, is likely not going to change that much. And so it's going to be, can we score on them? And if you can, then that respect goes away. But if you can't, like last season, then the Pats are going to win more games than I think we're going to give them credit for.
Listen, the Bills are the absolute best team in the AFC East. And to me, I don't even have to think about it. They are by far better than the Jets, the Dolphins, and the Patriots. They are better.
No doubt.
What I like about this approach from Brandon Bean is, yeah, you show the proper respect, right? But then behind closed doors, what you're saying is these guys are vulnerable. We're going to step on their throat and just suck the life out of them. Like, it's one thing to communicate it publicly, say the right thing, show respect. You know, it's been a 20-year grip on the division. You want to recognize that when somebody asks you. But as long as you're not communicating that to the building in Buffalo, which I know they're not, they're saying it's our time based on the acquisition with Stephon Diggs and all the other things they did this offseason. It's the Bills' time to fly. I think they're going to win double figures easily, and they are absolutely better than the Pats. But I like what Bean said. I like how he handled that. Classy. All right, speaking of Tom Brady, he's renting Derek Jeter's crib, the big mansion. 30,000 square feet is what Jeter built back in 2011 in Tampa. Would you want to live in another superstar's house if you were Tom Brady? You know, I don't think that I would. The one thing that I know that I'm getting with Jeter's home is that there's incredible privacy, because Jeter's, hell-bent on that. He was a very private, public figure. And even with the Marlins, running the show, he still has, he's not A-Rod, put it that way. And by the way, there was a picture of Alex Rodriguez and Jennifer Lopez sneaking into a gym today. Did you see this picture?
No, I didn't.
What a clown show. Come on, man. I mean, they're walking into the gym. As they're opening the door, there literally is a sign affixed to the door. We are closed due to the coronavirus. But obviously somebody let them in. I mean, come on. Stay at home and work out. It's so shallow. That bothered me. But anyway, I think it's a good spot for Tom Brady to reside, because, to get somebody else's condo or home that isn't quite as isolated and private, probably a little dangerous. Jeter knows what's up. Brady's probably saying, yeah, this is a good recipe to follow here.
Yeah, I know. And if you're thinking about this because Derek Jeter lived there, I mean, he lived there for in his off seasons and probably for training camp. It's out on Davis Island, which is a neighborhood of Tampa. And look, it's gorgeous. It's right on the water, the Intercoastal. And so there is absolute privacy. It's a gated community. BT, but Derek Jeter doesn't live there. You know what I mean? He lives in Miami, actually, closer to the inlands of Miami. He doesn't live on Miami Beach. I saw him down there at the Super Bowl in one of these events that I went to, and he's like, "Yeah, I never get over here," meaning the Miami Beach side. He's more inland, and so he probably hasn't been there in 5 years. Four years. Because he's got a day job that requires him to be in Miami.
Yeah.
I think this is fine. He's just rich enough that he can afford to keep an extra house. That's all it is.
By the way, did you see the expected rent? A local realtor estimated that Brady's going to pay, take a guess, per month.
$30,000.
$75,000 to
$100,000. Get out of here.
Yep. $75,000 to $100,000.
He's not paying that much. I think that's what it would go for. There's no way he's paying that much.
I'm just telling you what I read on Realtor.com. I mean, you might be right, but that's what they said.
I mean, the crazy thing in the lot is enormous.
30,000 right? square feet is ridiculous.
It's
I wouldn't even want that.
Yeah, it's like two lots.
I wouldn't want it.
But it's all house. You know what I mean? There's like
there's no yard.
There's no yard. It's like, how do you have a 30,000 square foot house and no yard?
They could have done so much more. A beautiful tennis court. There's a tennis court to the left of it if you're looking at it from the aerial shot. Now, they've got a pretty lengthy rectangle swimming pool.
Yeah.
But you got to put a basketball court. You got to put a putting green out there. I mean, there's so much more they could do. All right, DeMar DeRozan reportedly unhappy in San Antonio, and he might opt out of his contract for next season. Should DeRozan stay with the Spurs?
No, he can opt out. I don't know. I forget what his deal is. I know it's a big number down there, but if I was him, if it's not about the money, I absolutely would opt out. The Spurs are not the Spurs that we historically remember them as. Oh, this disrespected team that's always going to get into close to the second round of the NBA Western Conference, or maybe even to the conference championship. That's not the Spurs anymore. And so if you're DeMar DeRozan and you have the opportunity to opt out and get a decent number but not the number that you have and more of a chance to go play for a winner, absolutely, especially given how last year transpired. You leave Toronto, you trade for Kawhi Leonard, they go win a damn championship. I absolutely would want a championship if I'm DeMar DeRozan.
He's going to opt out. He should opt out. I think he's making around $27 million this year. He's still young enough, even though he's not a kid, but he's still got enough game, enough prime where he'll be a real coveted asset on what's going to be a bare-bones, thin free agent crop this summer. There is nothing out there. Unless Anthony Davis says, I'm going full-fledged into free agency, and nobody really expects that. I mean, there is just a dearth of level. He's not that DeRozan's level one, but he's level 1B or level two. But based on a shortage of stars out there, he almost elevates to level one. He will absolutely get more money than that, no doubt. And here's the thing. If you're winning in San Antonio, and this is not a knock at the great city of San Antonio, but if you're winning in San Antonio, that's one thing. If you're not winning and you're an NBA player, is that the city you want to be in? Debatable. Debatable. I mean, Tim Duncan loved it, but he won. If you're not winning, it's might change a little bit here. Okay, ESPN, what else? They re-aired something. Great job. They're doing a good job. So are we. We're doing a phenomenal job with this, with the college hoops, the rewinds, and all that stuff. ESPN re-aired the 2016 NBA Finals, and somehow, though, maybe we shouldn't say they did a good job, because they didn't show Kyrie's legendary three-ball, the game-winning dagger, coming back from commercial. After the shot went down, it was omitted. Never happened. We have to double-check the records. Are we sure the Cavaliers won the championship? What was the biggest shot or play you remember in NBA Finals history? Good question, Mike. Is that you?
No, this is you. Hard one to think about.
The
Ray Allen three-pointer, even though that wasn't the deciding game, against the Spurs, was dipped out by Chris Bosh. That's the one that
good
because
one.
It was like precision.
Good
like
one.
He got tipped out. He caught it, looked down to make sure his feet were down behind the line, looked up, drilled it, and all the Miami Heat fans were like, "Oh crap! We're like we bounced. We're outside, and the doors were locked." Like, I'll never forget that because it was one of those moments.
Yeah.
I feel like I saw this, though. They admitted it on the replay, or they admitted it in
real
time?
No, they came back from break, and it already aired. So I guess their commercial breaks weren't properly timed out.
Oh, on the re-air.
Just on the re-air.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah. Of course you saw it.
I was confused by that question. I was like, dude, I saw this. There's no way that they missed that.
Oh, we got to get out of that. Now we're not even sure what we saw in real time. It's time to go for a walk, right?
Yeah, exactly.
Boy, this is a great question. I would love a couple of beers over this one. The biggest one that I remember, I'll give you a couple. Magic's hook shot at the old Boston Garden, Lakers Celtics, was money. I mean, that was incredible theater. I would say that this was before my time, but it's obviously got a prominent spot. Willis Reed limping out, knocking down his first two jump shots in the NBA Finals after he hurt his leg. That's as historical as it gets. I would say the biggest shot or play that I remember, and I'm taking this with forever, was when Hakeem Olajuwon stepped out and blocked John Starks' three-pointer from the corner. Who knows if that's going down, and if it goes down, Knicks might have a championship. That's the one for me. Championship in my lifetime. All right, speaking of memorable re-airs, it's the Masters. On April 11th and the 12th, CBS, hello, friends. Yeah. Is re-airing famous Masters highlights.
Hello,
and
friend.
Yeah. How about this?
This is awesome.
I love it. And final rounds from Jack Tiger and Phil What is your favorite Masters memory?
Well, honestly, BT, you know mine because I told it to you. I forget what year this was. It had to be 2004 or 5 that it was canceled. I was still playing, and I went down with some friends, and we went to the Thursday opening round, and it was pouring, like downpour, and I think it was some lightning in the area that had just passed. So they ended up canceling the first round of the Masters. So this is a personal story, not something that happened at the Masters. Obviously, Tiger would fill that void for me. But we went down and nobody was there. And so we're only here for 2 days. We're only there for Thursday and Friday. I'm going to miss one day because it's canceled. Let's just go over to the putting green and see who's there. And that's when I met Freddie Couples.
Freddie Couples.
And the only reason I met him is because his caddy, Joe LaCava, who is now Tiger's caddy, thought I was Rondé. And he was yelling at me. No, this had to be 2004, after 2003, after Rondé won the championship. Mm. And he was like, show me a ring. Show me a ring. And I was like, dude, you must think I'm Rondé.
You thought he was taunting you from losing to the Ravens.
Yeah, exactly.
Who is this guy getting under my skin?
And he goes, oh, you're Tiki. And he's a huge Giants fan. And so we hit it off. That's why Joe and I are tight to this day. And Freddie Couples took me on a tour of the Masters Champions locker room.
That's amazing.
Unbelievable.
Well, okay.
Unbelievable.
Well, you win. So should I even answer this? I mean, this guy gets a tour of the locker room. Thanks, buddy. I'm going to say, great story. I've heard that a few times. Never gets old. Although every time it sounds a little different. Like, not that you're making it up, but there's a little different flair. So it doesn't sound repetitive. Good job. I'll just say Mickelson draining the 15-footer and getting about 3 inches off the ground, finally winning. You know, the most awkward white guy jump that you could possibly conjure up.
Yeah, no,
oh, God, horrendous.
I can see that one still.
You know, I'm a lefty guy, and I was rooting for him so many times. I believe that was Easter Sunday. I was in my parents' basement watching that. So, everybody, have a great Thursday, and we're back to it tomorrow. Teak, I'll see you then, buddy. Be well.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.